Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 412 of the Roguecast, recorded April 11th, 2023. Nick's not here, man.
All right, welcome to the podcast. Nick is not here.
Nick had a birthday and
he's
a vacation.
He's having his birthday right now as we record. It's Nick's birthday today.
Yeah, so wish him well.
When you see him tomorrow, wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah.
He went to New Orleans for a birthday weekend and...
Hopefully had a well-deserved time. Well, from what we saw, he did.
Looks like he had a good time. Yeah.
We know. It's been documented.
I myself love New Orleans. I've been there a few times. Went there for my honeymoon and my 20th anniversary. Dave, I know you've been.
I went like about 2 years ago and had a great time. So definitely.
When Nick gets back, let's close the store. We're gonna close the store this week. We're gonna go back to New Orleans.
Staff trip.
Yeah, staff trip.
Also, by the way, you guys are invited.
Yeah, everybody's
coming. You can make it.
Everybody's coming.
We'll rent out a block.
Yeah, the van will be here at 9 a.m. on Thursday. Does everybody show up? we'll just all party bus to New Orleans.
Yeah, just and if it gets too full, you may have to cling to the side, but you can come along.
Oh, we're recording this.
Oh no. I thought we were doing the test run.
Yeah, you're right. This is supposed to be the test. We're not going to New Orleans. We want to.
Yes.
There will be no party bus.
It is recommended, though.
Yes.
And we have suggested places to go.
So anyway, and then next Monday is my birthday. It's a Monday April birthdays.
It's a birth extravaganza.
In fact, like there's a ton of people we know with April birthdays.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how that came to be, but it is the case.
Also, Dave, I noticed that for those in numerology, today is episode 412 of the podcast. Do you know what day this podcast will be released?
And I don't.
412.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if that's ever happened before. Episode 412 will be released on 412.
I thought this was somehow leading up to a 420 joke.
Nope. That's the timing didn't work.
Okay. Wow. So this is perhaps the most sacred podcast we've ever done for various reasons.
Yes.
But I do want to say, we're going to be talking about some trailers that I think we're pretty excited about.
Yes, for sure.
Not like literally everyone, but it's good stuff.
And some Star Wars news.
There's a bunch of good comics this week, including some surprise.
It's a really good
I'm
week
sorry
of
Nick
comics.
Missed it because I think he'd like a lot of these too. But yeah, we've got some good stuff to recommend.
All right. Worth mentioning the $5 inventory sale. The last, everything on the table is $5. It's
wrapping up.
Wraps up on Friday. So if there's anything you want to make one last pass, get in here before Friday afternoon.
You know what I personally nabbed?
What's that?
Was the Jeff Lemire, what was the book that he did, the City?
Oh, yeah. I forget what the name of it is.
So I had picked up like the first volume at some point, but I've never gotten around to getting the others, so I got those on the cheap at Royal City.
Royal City, yeah.
And I'm like, man, there is some good stuff like that in there. Like, Jeff Lemire, that was, like, I think one of his strongest projects in the last few years.
And because you've already picked up Volume 1, I believe Volume 1 is still on the table for $5.
I think that should be right.
And then you can use a sampler and get the whole hardcover, which we still have.
That's true.
Also, Greg Rucka's Stumptown, which was the basis for a pretty solid TV show.
I think I'd already mentioned this, but especially I think for like parents and such, there's a bunch of My Little Pony stuff.
There's still some My Little Pony,
and we're still carrying My Little Pony, but a lot of them have changed formats to like a larger. They'll put together an omnibus like that has like three of them collected, and so yeah, why not get these ones? Your kids are going to love them.
Yep. And then we'll read them to destruction, and then you can get new versions later.
That's right.
No, hey. They read these to destruction, but they only cost us $5.
That's right.
Anyway, that ends on Friday, so get in before your last chance. Also, we are selling Greater Austin Comic Con tickets.
Right.
They are $35 for the weekend, and you can get a free pass for your kids under 12, I think.
When is Greater Austin Comic Con taking place?
It is the weekend of June 24th, which is also Free RPG Day, so we will not be at Greater Austin Comic Con. We'll be here doing Free RPG Day.
But a person might say, if they wanted to buy a ticket, they could come by before they go to Greater Austin Comic Con, grab a couple of free RPGs, and then go and have fun at the comic
convention. It's honestly a perfect day. You can do that. We can't because we're working it.
Yes, but you can nerd out at a level never seen before.
Yes. And then worth mentioning also that we have sort of a summer of rogues coming up. We got Free RPG Day is on June 24th. Free Comic Book Day is on May 6th, which is the day after... Guardians of the Galaxy comes out.
Right.
Guardians 3. And then we're doing a board game day. This is an experiment. We'll see how it goes. on July 15th, where art staffer John and I will be teaching a variety of games, demoing games.
Mm-hmm.
So come out and try some new board games. If we get a good attendance, we might make it a yearly thing. If we don't, it probably will never happen again.
And you and, let me say, aside from the fact that people will get to interact with the store owner, but you and John know something about games.
We know something about games.
And I played Dune with y'all just recently.
Yep.
And I have to, I'm not just blowing smoke here. Y'all did a great job explaining it. You told
so
me
good,
what
in
I
fact
that I beat you in the
you
game.
You beat us both.
Yes. Well, but like there's a certain art to giving the basics but not over explaining it and kind of diving into games sometimes and learning a little on the fly. It was super cool. People should come out for that.
We'll have a list of more details as we get closer to July. We're going to figure out which games we want to demo and that kind of thing. So that should be fun. We had a bunch of games come in this week. We have Everyday Heroes, which is basically, it's from the design team that did D20 Modern back in the...
Oh, wow. Back when in the back. Third edition, when they had the when they were really leaning hard into the open license, and everybody was, like, making one, and you could be like, oh, I want to make a D&D Civil War game.
Yep.
Somebody did that. I guarantee you they did. But D20 Modern was a cool one that imagined, spies and cyberpunk and stuff like that with a D20 system.
It was published by Wizards of the Coast. Like, it was an official product.
That's right.
So
those same people?
Those same people under a new game, Evil Genius Games, made basically the 5e version of D20 Modern. It's called Everyday Heroes.
Yep.
And you can do everything from, like, you know, Fast and the Furious, Mission Impossible, all the way up to sort of Alien. They've got aliens and cyborgs and that kind of thing. And then also, while they were kickstarting this on the way, which is why we have it early, they picked up some licenses. So you can get the core book, and then you can also, if you'd like, buy Adventure Paths. So the first two are The Crow, the movie The Crow, and Escape from New York.
Yeah, I think both of those are going to do well. And we were talking about this earlier with our staffer, Serena. But, like, The Crow probably has more cachet now. Right now, that was a big, more recent cult movie than Escape from New York. But I was flipping through it, and they both look really good. The Crow, among other things, you can choose different like the sort of, I know it's not a spirit animal, but it's like that kind of the thing he's bonded with.
Yeah,
you could bond with an owl or a mastiff.
How about a raccoon?
They probably have ways to do whatever you want. So I could get a possum or a raccoon, which are animals I love.
Yes.
But I was like, that's a cool idea. I don't know if that ever entered into the other movies, but you're going to get different abilities and things like that. And I was like, that sounds cool. I'm sure they have some good adventures. We talked about Escape from New York and the idea that, you know, in a way, anybody who's seen that movie knows that the way New York is portrayed is almost like a dungeon. And like when the crazies come out at night, it's like zombies, and there's certain areas that are like, that's where the Duke of New York controls, and if you cross him, you could go into essentially in the gladiator arena. That's straight out of a dungeon.
Yep.
So, I'm sure they get lots of room to explore. New York's a big ass place. I don't even know what's going on in Central Park, but I'm sure it's something. What other licenses
so
are...
So coming up, they're going to have Pacific Rim,
yep.
Total Recall, Rambo...
Kong of Skull Island.
Kong of Skull Island, and I feel like there's a couple others, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny. Kong of Skull Island is a movie that we occasionally have on here at work. It is a fun movie, I believe, and one of the better and basically most watchable kaiju movies recently. Not just good special effects, but also... It's kind of it's got an island of a bunch of other neat monsters.
Yep.
And I'm sure the game has more of them and full cool confrontations. And I believe this would allow the game master to perfect a 70s soundtrack.
That's correct.
Which is what half the reason you got to go see that movie.
We also we got in a game that came with the Dragonlance book.
Right, for D&D.
Like 6 or 8 months ago, wherever that came out.
Yeah, it was supposed to have come out simultaneously, but some production issue held it up.
And so now Warriors of Kryn is out as a standalone cooperative board game. You can use it with your Dragonlance. You can, like, bring your characters from your Dragonlance adventure into there and do the mass battles there.
Yep.
Or you can play it as a standalone, like, cooperative war game. And the thing that's notable about this, in addition to being set in the Dragonlance world, is that it's designed by Rob DeVoe, who did he originated the Legacy games. Risk Legacy, Pandemic Legacy, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Right. If you played a Legacy game, it was because he invented the genre.
Yeah, so Warriors of Kryn is not a Legacy game, but it is a co-op game.
Yeah, that sounds cool. It's co-op.
It is co-op.
So it's like probably everybody versus the Dragon
everybody
Armies.
Everybody versus the Dragon Armies, yes.
Yeah, for people who don't know the Dragonlance setting, aside from, you know, it was a big, very big thing in the 80s. Several memorable books based on it for the D&D setting. But it is a world with lots of dragons and, you know, sort of the bad guy armies, if you want to think of them as like Sauron-type armies, have these dragon armies. And it's D&D specific dragons, so like blue dragons, red dragons, the evil dragons like that, black dragons. And ultimately, I think the heroes are able to rally a smaller force of, I think, metallic dragons.
Yeah.
But they also they mount dragon lances on them, which are these like unbreakable little metal lances that like lock into the to the saddles that the riders ride on them. So, you know, I gather this game allows you to, is going to let the players take roles in that. If you're playing the adventure, you know, it's a game that is, like, has a wartime setting, the RPG, and they designed it so that, yeah, when battles come up, you can play out the battles in, with this board game. But it also does function just as its own board game, even if you've never played D&D one day in your life.
So, the designer, in addition to working on creating Legacy format, he also worked on the Return of Dark Tower game, which is great.
Very, very well received.
And he worked with Stephen Baker on Axis and Allies Pacific, which is Stephen Baker is his co-designer on this game. So pretty good pedigree. He also helped design Betrayal House on the Hill.
Right.
So kind of a lot of the best of games. So I have not had a chance to play this yet, but based on that pedigree, I'm very curious to try it out.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And then We got a restock from Hasbro, so we got some games we haven't had before, as well as a big restock on Betrayal at House on the Hill, Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, which is the D&D themed version of that, and HeroQuest, the new HeroQuest, which we've not had before, which we've had requests for.
You know, by the way, I was just thinking, like, I think especially for kind of more casual people who've just finished watched the D&D movie and had a good time, which as it turns out, it seems like everybody who sees it is saying that.
Yeah.
Betrayal at House on the Hill is also a very fun casual game. A lot of people really like that. I think that Betrayal at Baldur's Gate would be an especially popular one.
Oh, for
because
sure.
It works just like Betrayal at House on the Hill, only instead of the 50 or so options of different monsters, they are all D&D specific monsters. You also like go in through a tavern, and instead of going to the basement, like it's the Underdark or the dungeons and sewers and stuff. It is really neat, and it has like a little bit more combat, I think, in it than the regular House on the Hill.
Well, that's the thing. If you don't want to jump into D&D proper, these games are all good board games. The ones we got, the Yawning Portal, which is the famous inn. This is a game about sort of like gem trading and eating food and that kind of like basically running the inn.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
There's Bedlam and Neverwinter, which is a 3-part escape room style game.
Yeah.
It tells a big story that like goes through Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter and I forget.
That's really
else.
Cool. Yeah. Like a D&D escape room game, that's awesome.
And then D&D Adventure Begins, which is a co-op game, sort of a entryway into D&D.
That is arguably the one that interests me most because I really like co-op games like Pandemic. I want to see how they play that out. I was just looking at the back of it. The art looks cool on the different heroes you can play. So there's lots of different options here.
We also have new this week, Dead by Daylight, the board game.
Right.
This is based on a video game. It's one of those one versus many. Mm-hmm. So one person, and it's the same with the board game. One person plays the killer, and it's, I guess in the video game they've got all kinds of license. They've got
it's one of those online games where you multiplay games.
Yeah,
somebody plays the killer, everybody else plays people trying to survive them.
In this board game, I think it is more like a hidden movement. Basically, one person's playing the killer,
yeah.
The other three people are trying to escape or take down the killer. We've got Cavendish, which is a new Time Stories game. It's like a 1950s haunted mansion.
Okay,
but it's a time travel story game. Setup, which is a new party game. We got Unmatched Teen Spirit. Unmatched is a little miniatures combat game that runs from 2 to 3 people. You can mix and match all the games. That's why it's called Unmatched.
They use a lot of public domain heroes like Robin Hood and Sinbad and stuff like that, and stuff like Bigfoot.
Yep.
But also there's people like Bruce Lee and Deadpool and stuff like that.
They've notably have licensed Marvel, and so this is their third Marvel game. This one's called Teen Spirit, and it has Squirrel Girl, Miss Marvel, and Cloak and Dagger.
That's super cool.
They come with super cool miniatures of each character,
mm-hmm.
and then a little deck of cards. And the art design was originally by Mondo, so it's got this really cool like Art Deco look.
Yep.
So like I played this weekend, and the art is really cool, and the gameplay is really cool. So definitely worth a play. We got the Black Chromebook for Cyberpunk, the RPG.
This right. is
heavily a equipment book. It's got weapons and more cyberware, that kind of thing. But it also has like a night in the life of a cyberpunk and sort of a geography stuff. So it's a basically big source book for cyberpunk.
A lot of people had been waiting on this and anticipating it. It seemed like a... Yeah, and didn't we get the main Cyberpunk game back in,
too? We did. We got that back in stock.
So, yeah, and people have been asking about that, too. So if that is where you're feeling, we have some options.
And then we've got Ares Expedition Discovery. This is the sort of slightly stripped-down Terraforming Mars to be less mm-hmm. a little less time-consuming. This is the Discovery expansion for that. I've heard good things. I've not played this one, but I've heard good things about it. All right. That's our new games. Let's jump over and talk about comics for April 12th.
Yeah.
There's a bunch to get through this week. So let's start with Guardians of the Galaxy number 1. Dave, I think you and I have both read off and on. You read some of Donny Cates, I read some of Al Ewing's. Like we've read
The modern pieces. Guardians of the Galaxy came around roughly in the mid 2000s and I've liked some of the stuff, but it's been a while since one has kind of grabbed me.
Yeah, same. And this one is It is a pretty heavy reinvention. Like they are sort of you call it sort of the Firefly style.
Yeah, they're leaning into them as kind of like outlaw heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a little bit of like I feel like there's a bit more Mal in Star-Lord
yeah.
than say that we would expect from the movies or that we'd seen in the comics. He's always been an outlaw guy, but there's a bit of Mal specifically.
So this takes place on like a border planet called Galilee 4.
Yep.
In the town of Solitude, and basically the Guardians show up and they're trying to get everyone to evacuate because something dangerous is coming.
They do a kind of one of the ways I like the things I like about this is the way it's structured.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like it moves with a lot of energy. You feel when they get there, it reminded me of like you know that heist scene in the movie Serenity.
Yeah,
that kind of energy. So there's a lot of stuff going on. We're introduced to the Guardians kind of one by one. It's like, oh, yep. where's so and so? Oh, where's Gamora? Oh, she's sniping from up on that like rock up in the on the yep. on the cliffside. Oh, where's Drax? Oh, he's going to show up and do some cool shit. And so everybody kind of gets an interesting and remarkable entrance, and you get a sense of where they are right now in their life.
I really like the... Kev Walker does the art. There's really great redesigns on the characters.
What do I know Kev Walker from?
He's been in a bunch of stuff. I don't know where you know him from.
He's not like an Invincible guy
No. He's not a bunch of stuff from Marvel and DC. I didn't look up to see what he's done
before. It's fine. But it's good looking artwork.
He has been, he's a British artist.
Okay.
He worked on Warhammer 2000 AD. He worked on the Legion with Abnett Lanning.
Oh, interesting.
And then he worked on Annihilation, so this is not his first time drawing the Guardians.
Okay.
He worked on Marvel Zombies 4 and became the main artist on Thunderbolts.
So I think what we would say, Randy, is that people going into this should know that it is a not a massive reinvention of them, but it's like a bit of a slight rethink. The same way the movie was a bit of a rethink mm-hmm. of the comics. And this synthesizes elements of both, but it's also its own thing, and it's leaning into that sort of a little bit of Western vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I think people should try it out. I think it is worth testing out.
I think neither of us is particularly on our radar, and then we both wound up really liking this first issue.
Yep.
There is a Captain America crossover. There's two Captain America books, if you don't know, Sentinel of Liberty and Symbol of Truth.
Right. You got one Sam, and you got Steve.
One is Sam, one is Steve. Well, this is a story called Captain America Cold War. Cold War Alpha comes out this week. This is going to tie them both together. Winter Soldier is working for some kind of secretive organization, along with Black Panther's secret police guy, the White Tiger. Or is it White Wolf?
Does Black Panther have... Yeah, I think White Wolf.
Yeah.
Does Black Panther have a secret police? Because that sounds
fashion. Wakandan's secret police, yes. This was interested in Priest's run.
Okay.
He is his adoptive brother. He's a white man adopted by his father.
Okay.
And he's basically like, he treats T'Challa like a brother, but he is like the sinister guy who T'Challa's never gotten along with.
Okay. And he, I guess that makes sense as the person who'd be secret police, because I don't know really any sort of version of secret police that's ever been a good thing.
Oh, no, he's a bad guy.
Okay. Well, all right, then I can work with that.
Yeah, he's definitely not a good guy.
I thought it was like you were saying, like, Black Panther brings out his secret police to help him, and I was
this is more of like a, when Priest was doing the very political Black Panther, he was like, this guy would be the guy who would help him out in ways that he didn't want to be helped.
Right.
And Winter Soldier's working for him was for some kind of secret organization called the Outer Circle. And he's supposed to be trying to bring it down from the inside, but it seems like he's kind of a bad guy right now. Sharon Carter's in this. Misty Knight and Colleen Wing. But basically there's a big thing going on where they have to, the two Caps have to team up against Winter Soldier's organization. And there's also some weird interdimensional stuff from one of the Rick Remender runs.
So this is the like kickoff special, and then it's going to bounce between the two books. Comics. Yep. Got it.
This week we have a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Usagi Yojimbo crossover, which, Dave, you were not going to read this.
No. Nope.
And I kind of pushed you to, and I think you enjoyed it.
I did. And you know, I've liked Ninja Turtles over the years. I've really liked Usagi Yojimbo over the years. People who read that know it's that while it is a comic book about a samurai rabbit, it has always been much better than you would think that would be. It's really good. And they have crossed over before, as far back as the 90s, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
This one, here's the thing that it does that's really cool, especially I think this is especially cool for longtime Usagi readers. I don't know exactly what is happening in the most current timeline for Usagi, but this at least is allowing that a decent amount of time has passed, and all these characters I recognize in there, like from his the roguish Ronin guy that he teams up with, Gen, the rhino guy, to his son. His son is now like what, teens
and more 20s. He's a samurai in service to the Lord.
Yep, and they're making their move against the guy who's been the big bad of the whole series,
the person who killed Usagi's original master, and made him Ronin.
Yeah, way back in like the 1980s.
But
you don't need to know any of that stuff.
No, but
if you do know,
if you do,
it's dope.
But what happens is that they are on the march, and they happen upon a village where some villagers are like an evil kappa is killing our people.
I think people kind of know those pretty well, but it's like a turtle demon
Japanese
folklore.
A bowl of water on its head, and if you knock the bowl of water off, it dies.
Yep.
So you might guess if there's a turtle demon and they're looking for turtles, what might happen if they run into the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which Usagi knows, but his son does not.
Yep. And guess who comes traveling back in time?
Traveling back in time because of a evil cyborg named Dr. Werewin.
Yep. And he's clearly, he's already done some time manipulation, and he's like, these turtles suck, they're messing with me.
Yep.
He's like, I'm gonna go farther back, and I need to get some stuff done before they were around.
Yep.
But they're able to follow him, as sometimes happens. And bam, they're in that timeline. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
If like me, you have some fondness for either the properties in there, even if you were thinking, maybe give it a shot. It's good.
We've got Image's new book from James Tynion called World Tree.
Yep.
This is art by Fernando Blanco, which I feel like I know that name from somewhere. He's definitely worked with him on stuff before.
It rings a bell. I can only say it's good art. It's very good art. You know who it looks like? It looks like somebody who'd be working with Tom King.
Yeah.
Only I am not a big fan of Tom King's art. Not his art, but his writing. Sorry to those who are. But he does work with amazing artists.
Yep.
So I'm happy to see an artist of this caliber working with a writer I like a lot more.
So this is pretty truly horrific.
It is an actual unsettling horror book, but it has a very cool like hook and sort of premise that I was making the sign for yesterday, and I was like, oh, I'll give that a read, which is that in the 1990s, some kids who were probably like, you know, hackers of the era, discovered that there is some secret underbelly to the internet that was not like maybe something supernatural or something that was not just like, now I'm not talking about the dark web, I'm talking about like some mystical architecture or something like that, you know, the same way there's like, what do they call them, ley lines or whatever in the world. Maybe there's something like that. They don't get into a lot of detail, but it is something. If you see it, it seems like it can cause madness, and does in a really disturbing opening sequence.
Yep.
And And then there's, like, what I kind of like with Tinian and what he'll do sometimes is it's sort of these conversational moments. So then we're riding along with, like, a guy and his girlfriend in a car. And he's talking about how his, like, he's worried about his little younger brother. His younger brother says he watched some really messed up video on, like, you know, like a TikTok or something earlier. And he said that the kid was trying to put on a brave face, but he seemed like it was really maybe kind of bothered him. And she's like, oh, you know, you used to go to 4chan. You saw Goatsy. You know some weird stuff.
Yeah.
And she's like, it was probably fake anyway. You may see where this is going to intersect in some way with the story of some of this horrific thing from the 90s. And I don't want to get into too many details because it's a lot more fun to discover on your own. But I just liked the way they suddenly they smash cut to that conversation, which is really interesting. Tinian is good at this kind of stuff. At like just watching two people talk about something can be interesting. And and then there's a few other players who show up, including you see somebody who seemingly survived the 90s thing. You know what struck me as, Randy? It struck me as similar to It.
Yeah.
You've got sort of the people in the present who are dealing with it, and much kind of like the grown-up kids in It. You have whoever those hackers or whatever they were in the 90s who right. initially ran into it and thought they had covered it up.
Yeah.
They are like, we have to deal with this again. But if that sounds a little prosaic, I can say the execution is really good.
Excellent, scary first issue.
Yeah, I think for me, in a week of good stuff, it might have been my favorite. There's one or two others vying with it, but it might
have
been my favorite.
We have a book from Jared Dugan and Scott Koblish. They've done, along with Brian Poussin, who I don't believe is involved in this one, the Scotch McTurnan, which is the sort of like the 420 and the holiday special. They do sort of weird, out there,
raunchy comics that would be the equivalent of gross out and stoner movies.
They have this thing is called Giant Kaiju.
It looks like Kaiju.
K-O-K-J-U.
Yes. And it is about a Kaiju.
He comes to San Francisco and starts pooping on everything.
Yes. it's funny because the narration is kind of acknowledging this is a climate change world. This is like kind of our... It's our world, but he's very specifically... He's like, is that what made it rise from the beast? You know, from the depths? You know, who knows? But it's going to give as good as it gets. And then, yes, it comes and just unleashes a bunch of toxic poop. Yep. On the city to start with.
Yep.
That's just the start of its normal biological functions.
Yep.
Later on, its mating habit activates.
Yep.
And, all right, so this is like gross out Deadpool Kaiju.
Yep. That's what it is.
It's a lot, but if any of that sounded interesting to you, go ahead and give it a flip through.
We've got a new boom book called The Seasons Have Teeth, written by Dan Waters, who I know has written some other stuff for them. Art by Sebastian Cabral, and man, this is a beautiful looking book.
Yeah, the cover will remind people, I think, of like some of the strong covers from Fables back in the day. I don't know who did those covers. I'm blanking.
Oh yeah,
they were really good.
Yeah.
Anyway, but this was another one that had a neat premise that I liked, which is very mysterious, like World Tree. I think Seasons Have Teeth is going to take a few issues for you to fully see what's going on. But it's kind of like an alternate Earth where when the seasons arrive, they like arrive almost with geographic specificity. Like, oh, the spring is going to arrive and it's going to almost the way you would chart a hurricane, like exactly that way.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's going to be passing over Maryland right now. Spring is coming over Maryland. And people evacuate because there are like some kind of monsters in the seasonal zones.
Yep.
And our lead is a guy who's like an older guy who is a former wartime photographer who seems like he's got some PTSD issues and some tragedies in his life and is maybe a little past caring. He's kind of reckless with his life. And he's like, I'm going to try and get a picture of one of these things. And he goes into sort of the season zone or stays behind. It was very interestingly structured, and this is also one of my favorite books of the week.
It also, you know, as I read it, this is a mini-series, but this is almost a perfect single issue. Like, it tells a complete story.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're going to get something out of it just between the beginning and end, and if it were to have ended right there, I want to know. I do want to know what happens next, but it's the kind of pregnant pause that kind of does work as a standalone.
We've got the Great British Bump Off. This is a Dark Horse book written by John Allison, who you might know from... he did Steeple most recently. He did Giant Days.
Giant Days, that's the big one.
This is his... This is basically, it is the Great British Bake Off, but there's a murder.
Right, it's like Agatha Christie Bake Off.
Yep. A lot of fun, very cartoony art. You'll know from that pitch whether you're into it or not.
You know, I haven't read that yet, but I do like, I've occasionally stumbled across the Great British Bake Off. I don't watch a ton of TV. When I've stumbled across it, I've thought, this is pretty good. With the murder added in there? Yeah, sure. Know, who knows?
There's a new 007 book called 007 for King and Country.
Yep.
It's written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who's been writing Action Comics over DC.
Yeah.
This is a pretty solid writer.
Was he doing the ones where Superman was, like, off in space and stuff?
Yes, he did all that, but he's also doing the current one.
Okay. And I know that's got some fans, and so, yeah, if you've been looking for, like, to maybe, you know, give Bond another try... We've, I think, had stopped carrying it a little bit, or carrying it in lighter numbers for the various miniseries they did. But this one seems like more of, like they're giving it more of an oomph, and, you know, I think might be more worth checking out than usual.
Star Wars continues its Return of the Jedi 40th anniversary celebration with one-shots. This time, Star Wars Ewoks. it is a framing story and three... individual stories, all of which are silent stories because Ewoks don't really talk. They sometimes say yub nub.
Yep, they do. They speak Ewok language. Yeah. Their other Ewoks know what they're saying. But I guess it would sort of ruin the mystery if it said, an Ewok said yub nub and a little translation below said, how are you doing, my friend?
Exactly.
And I'd be like, yeah, that's... Oh, okay. Anyway, I believe that these stories range from lighthearted. I saw one that almost looked like it was riffing on like a Grinch type story,
yeah.
Just visually, and another one where that was focusing on them as like scary little cannibal men.
Yep. Also, they are the framing sequence has the shaman Lo Gray.
I'm familiar with
telling
Lo Gray.
Stories to little baby Ewoks.
Okay, that's good. You remember the scene where he's very clearly telling the little baby Ewoks a story in Return of the Jedi?
You mean where C-3PO is translating for him? No.
Oh, yeah, that is it. You know, I was thinking in my memory that he managed to make that sound. But, yeah, of course it would C-3PO be 3PO doing it robotically.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Logray's just wandering around in the background.
That's just the thing.
What does he even do?
I don't know.
Does Logray do anything?
He's their shaman. He does nothing.
Okay.
He had an action figure, though, which is why we know his name.
That's true. Well, I hope he devours some stormtroopers in this.
I'm sure he will.
Good for you, Logray.
There's a new Marvel Voices. This has been... Usually they do one of these every quarter or maybe a little more frequently. It is like, Latinx Month or Pride Month.
Yeah.
This
their
one
opportunity
is,
to showcase diverse both heroes and also creators.
So this is actually all BIPOC and LGBTQIA creators.
But it's Spider-Verse stuff
but
specifically?
It's Spider-Verse. So it's got a couple different Miles Morales stories, one of each of his costumes, which is interesting.
Huh.
A story of Web Weaver, the gay Spider-Man introduced in Spider-Verse.
Yep.
Silk has a story in here.
Right.
Spider-Punk has a story in here. And then there's another new character that I don't remember where this, but he looks like Speed Demon.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if... Yeah, that's... Speed Demon is traditionally a Spider-Man bad guy, but yep. Maybe there's some version... His costume is a little Spider-Man-ish, though.
Yep.
I'll have to read through it and see
what
its deal
is. There's a couple new Spider-Man introduced, so, you know.
With the... I'm sure people have been... I'm sure seen the very good trailer that they did for the Spider-Verse stuff recently.
Yep.
So I imagine you might be feeling Spider-Verse vibe.
Fantastic Four, Ryan North's Fantastic Four, comes to a... conclusion of its first story arc here, number 6.
We've been a fan of the series from its launch, and this just kind of like we knew it was good.
Yep.
Every issue has been good.
Yep.
And there was just some question, I think, like can they wrap what will be the first trade with a good story? And I think Randy, you and I both agree the answer is yes.
Oh yeah, it's a really great finale for a story. And the next this issue, number 7, is also through the magic of Marvel numbering, number 700. It looks like Doom's going to be there, so it'll be a big big event thing.
You know what about this is that, like, I am not finding this book predictable.
No. I have no idea what they're... And they're doing this sort of family stuff. They're doing this the weird science-y stuff. They're doing the superhero stuff. It is everything I want Fantastic Four to be. And there's been a lot of Fantastic Four that I don't like. There's a lot of stuff I found boring, or where they lean too heavily on one aspect or another. This is pretty much everything I want the FF to be.
Yep. I agree. And you know what's interesting? It's done it in a way that they didn't particularly... we talked about this, I guess, a little before. They didn't really change anything. They weren't like, oh, let's make Reed a young hotshot, or yeah. let's make Reed a millennial. There's no change-ups.
No change-ups, Dave?
Other than how they...
I think you're forgetting a certain someone's mustache.
Just because Johnny Storm had to grow a creepy... who's the guy who had the HBO series that neither you nor I particularly liked? Comedian... Rednecky guy, mullet-y.
Larry the Cable Guy?
No, mullet guy.
I don't know.
He's been in some stuff we liked.
I know you're talking about.
He was
Steve,
in the End of the World
Steve
thing.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. It's like that, Randy. Yeah. That's what he looks like.
It is, yes.
But no, my point is, though, that this just kind of relenses them a little bit. He just found a new voice. I actually think his stuff is a little bit more thoughtful on the sci-fi stuff. Like it feels like he's done a little more research into how their powers would do some of the science-y stuff that they do in it. But they still also, you know, like, punch bad guys and stuff.
Yeah,
and then also have the family time. So, like, it still feels very classic FF in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's a really good run. And we actually have all 5 issues.
Yep.
Or now all 6.
You should get them all. But also that means that when the trade comes out, buy friends the copy of the trade.
Yep. There's a new issue of Moon Knight, which has a Tigra focus, and that was a really good single issue.
Yeah, there was some stuff revealed about, like, you know, Tigra was in some of the first Avengers comics I read.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's just an oddball supporting character at the time. I don't know that there's a ton of people out there who are like, I'm a huge Tigra fan, but I think I've always liked her.
Yeah.
And the way she's been used in Moon Knight has been really good. They go back to West Coast Avengers, so there's kind of some fun callbacks to that. And there's some neat developments with her in this, as well as really good art.
Yeah, it's a really good
but
issue.
Just watching her and Moon Knight hang out is weirdly good just in and of itself.
And I feel like it's one of those, which I've been enjoying Moon Knight all throughout. This is Jed McKay. But I feel like this is a standalone issue where you could just read this as its own thing and yep. not have to read anything else.
Yeah, you know, I've hit a few issues of Moon Knight like that because I hadn't been following it every single one, but... It is one of those ones, and so, yeah, if somebody's curious, you can probably just walk in.
Yeah, Dave, we got a comment from Ryan North. We got a comment from Jed McKay. Only Tom Taylor is missing in our...
He had his day. He's an old man now.
2 Star Trek books this week, Star Trek number 6 and their spinoff Star Trek Defiant number 2. Both really good, both sort of in a... Post-Voyager, pre-Nemesis continuity, maybe?
I believe that, as we've determined, that's where it would be. Because, like, you pointed out, Randy, that Data's in this. Data has to get blown up at the end of Nemesis.
Yep.
But you've got a span of time to work with before that.
It is a best, though. I've talked about it before, but it's the ship they're on. It's a sort of experimental ship.
Uh-huh.
They've got Scotty from the original series. They've
right.
got Tom Paris from Voyager. They've got... someone from Deep Space
but
Nine.
Not time travel Scotty.
No,
rather,
no.
It's old man Scotty who showed
yeah.
up later.
Yeah, and they're referencing all the different eras. Sisko's from Deep Space Nine is the captain.
Yep.
Crusher's on there. It's a cool idea. And then the Defiant has Worf along with a few other familiar faces
nice.
Stealing the Defiant and using it for their own missions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of second issues this week. There was issue number 2 of The Ambassadors, which is that Mark Millar book about 6 people being granted superpowers by a billionaire,
yep.
which I think, despite ourselves, we found ourselves liking.
That's true.
They're doing different artists on each one. This one is Carl Kerschel. I really liked this second issue, too. Phantom Robe, which is Jeff Lemire and Gabriel Walta's new sort of horror book.
It's kind of horror road trip, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And that's a speed I like from Stephen King's, like, a big chunks of The Stand were road trip.
Lemire is such a Stephen King guy, you can tell.
He is. And but also, like, you know, like, Midnight Nation from JMS back in the day.
Yeah.
That was a road trip vibe one. And this is one, too. So it seems like there's a trucker and the woman, did he hit her car? Or
I think so.
In the first issue. But anyway, they are traveling in what seems like a desolate, desert-like, alternate version of the world... But that does reflect it, and in this one, they, for instance, find a truck stop where reality seems to, as they walk in and out of it, to flicker back and forth between the worlds,
yep.
and they find somebody who kind of knows a bit about where they are, and there's that, and some very creepy stuff happens in it, too. I think this is going to be a series I'll end up picking up when it comes out in trade.
I've noticed the last few things Lemire's done have been about alternate realities coexisting with ours. Yeah. Seems like a thing he has an interest in.
I think he has an interest in drugs.
Maybe so.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't know anything about Jeff Lemire other than
he's a
Canadian guy, and I know he's got a fascination with small towns.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one is a, if you like that sort of supernatural road trip notion, it's well worth checking out.
Scott Snyder and Francis Manapul's Cyberpunk Noir Clear gets a second issue, which I really enjoyed. Dark Ride is, I think, starting a new story arc. This is an Image book by Joshua Williamson, Andre Bresson, the creators of Birthright. This is the one where basically it's a Walt Disney of horror. It's a horror land called, I forget what it's actually called.
What's the name of the book?
It's called Dark Ride.
Okay, so that's
and
not
this
the
is
name
delving
of
more into the family that created this sort of weird theme park and the obvious demonic ties that are going on with them, and starting to deepen the mysteries of what is going on in this creepy theme park. The finale of Charles Sewell and Ryan Brown's 8 Billion Genies,
yep,
which takes a big long view, explains where the genies come from, why they are the way they are, and is a very satisfying and kind of sweet ending.
Yeah, you told me a little bit about it since I'd sort of lost track of the book, and I was like, I'll probably read it in trade, but I went ahead and allowed you to mention it. Of course, I'm not going to say what it is, but I was like, oh, that is a pretty neat ending. I kind of dig that.
Yeah, it's good. We also have a second printing of Hallows Eve, the new Spider-Man's, not villain, but maybe anti-hero?
At the very least, she's been a supporting character. It's she had been the girlfriend of
Ben Reilly.
Ben Reilly. And, yeah, she's got, like, a magical... is it magic-based powers?
She's got magic-based masks that give her different abilities.
Yeah, depending on the mask, she's got... Wear witch masks, she got witch powers. Wear goblin masks, she got goblin powers.
We all like the first issue of this. It sold out pretty quickly, so this second printing is available if you want to try it out.
Yep.
There's a new Junji Ito book. Junji Ito is Japanese master of horror. His stuff has been a big hit of late. We've been fans for decades now.
Yep.
And this is called Tombs, T-O-M-B-S. Another cool-looking hardcover from him. And then also a compendium of Top 10, Alan Moore and Gene Haw's book and Xander Cannon, about a sort of multiversal police city.
Yeah, it's like a city where everyone has powers. Yep. They're not all superheroes, but they all have powers.
What powers?
And it's sort of a police procedural in that city. We were telling our staffer John, who did know about it yesterday, and it's told at least initially largely through the point of view of a woman who goes by her code name, her like superhero name is Toy Box. She's the daughter of like one of those crazy evil toy guys like in comics, you right. know, like Toy Man. And she uses like his little dolls and helicopters and like little stuff like that to like collect forensic evidence. And like that's just kind of a quick glimpse into what's going on, but like you'll sort of meet lots of different people at the precinct. There's a host of different interesting types there. It's a very witty comic, really good standalone issues. You know how Alan Moore does very tightly constructed not just superhero, but all of his stories are very tightly crafted and structured.
Was this 24 issues altogether? I feel like it was 24 issues.
I think it was like, I want to say 12 issues initially.
Yep.
Then there was a graphic novel called The 49ers.
Yes.
And then there was the miniseries with the blue guy.
Smacks.
And that
is more, it takes him in place is his home world, which is more fantasy themed.
Right, right. He was almost like, you know, a Conan brought to the modern times right. or whatever. And I don't know if there's anything else, okay. but like... Maybe there's something else.
But all of that is contained in this compendium.
It's got good art. Yeah. If you are a genre fan at all, you will see, like, say, tons of, like, small details in the background.
Yeah.
It kind of casually crosses license without permission with everything. I always remember when they go to the airport that you will see it's like a time travel and other worldly dimensional right. Nexus. And you're going to see, like... Marty and Doc in there. You're going to see Doctor Who. And those are like the mainstream ones. There's like much more obscure stuff that you'll find in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, super highly recommended.
All right, that's comics for the week. We're going to take a break and then we're going to come back and talk about our news. All All right, so we'll talk about all the Star Wars stuff. There's a bunch of Star Wars news. But first, let's talk about the trailer for the Marvels, which dropped today. Or I guess it's just a teaser.
Yeah. It used one of the background, one of the funnest Beastie Boys songs, Intergalactic.
Yep.
And I think that's a very good song choice.
I've been excited for this movie since they announced it, and they keep moving it. It now is November.
What was it originally supposed to be?
I thought it was supposed to be last year.
Yeah.
And I think they moved to this, like, it was going to be the summer release of this year, and then they were like, Bob Iger decided too many Marvel movies, and so he decided to scoot it, and I'm like, no, more Marvel movies, not less. But
I haven't kept up with its time at all, so it's neither here nor there for me.
So you didn't watch all of Ms. Marvel, or any of Ms. Marvel?
I watched some of Ms. Marvel. Okay. And actually, this kind of makes me want to go back and finish it. I was already liking it.
Got a great finale.
I just, the last thing I watched all of was Loki, but I never finished Moon Knight, never finished Ms. Marvel, and I feel like there's something else I didn't.
She-Hulk?
Oh, Hawkeye. Okay.
Oh, you didn't finish Hulk?
Yep.
Did you watch all of She-Hulk?
I did watch She-Hulk.
Okay.
But clearly, sometimes I miss them.
You should finish all these. These all have good finishes.
Yeah, they all seem good. They're fine. But this has a very specific premise. I don't know exactly what happens, but it seems like... Let's say who the Marvel heroes are.
Captain Marvel. A.K.A. Carol Danvers.
Yep.
Ms. Marvel, A.K.A. Kamala Khan, who in the comics idolizes Captain Marvel. That's where she gets her idea for her first appearance. She looks like Captain Marvel.
Right. We should say in comics and in the show.
And in the MCU, yeah, she idolizes Captain Marvel. And Monica Rambeau, who in the comics was Captain Marvel after the first Captain Marvel died.
Right. All that history gets a little complicated. But the point is, they've kept her around. In the comics, her name has been Photon for, like, 10, 20 years now. If not more, 20, 30, maybe. But she's probably going to be Photon in the movie?
She will be, but to me, she will always be Captain Marvel. She was my Captain Marvel.
I agree. Same for me. But those are the three leads, and their stories become intertwined when they...
So, if you have seen all of Ms. Marvel, which you have not, and the spoilers for Ms. Marvel, but too late... The post-credit sequence of episode one, Ms. Marvel is activating her powers. She's testing out her powers again, and then all of a sudden, she like blasts it across the wall, or she blasts into her closet, and then all of a sudden she is Captain Marvel. And we weren't clear, like, wait, is this Kamala in Captain Marvel's body? What happened? But clearly, the trailer reveals that the three Marvels are entangled somehow and are swapping places when they use their powers.
Yeah. Not like a body swap, but like they literally swap places.
So Kamala Khan, who is a girl from Jersey City, winds up in space fighting space monsters.
Right. And she also ends up running into Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury.
She is a fangirl. That's kind of her thing. And it opens with this bit of Monica is like a part of S.W.O.R.D. and she is.
She's doing some space operation.
She's doing a space operation for Fury.
Yeah, it's like in Earth's orbit or something.
And then something happens. They use power. Her power activates. And Kamala Khan, suddenly in the spacesuit, floats over and is like, oh my god, it's Nick Fury!
Yeah, it swaps out with her. Yeah, she fangirls out at him.
Which then leads Nick Fury and Monica to go visit Kamala and her family in Jersey, which is great.
Yep.
And then Captain Marvel turns up.
Yep. There's a lot of fun culture clash stuff. The Kamala's Indian family, like looking at like Nick Fury and Carol, like, I'm sorry, who?
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
are you? You know, why are you asking about our daughter? And it looks like it's all presented with like kind of this energetic comedic vibe. Yep.
Kamala meets Goose.
Right.
Using fashion.
What is Goose?
He's a Flurkin.
Flurkin. That was the word I was looking for. There's definitely Flurkins here, Flurkins plural, I think.
Are there Flurkins plural? Well, yeah, I saw the cats.
You know what? That's
maybe
what I was going to say.
Are those all Flurkins?
My guess is they are, but who knows? Maybe there could be regular cats in there.
I don't know who the bad guy is. I couldn't quite spot it.
Yeah, you see them in action, but this is like one of those early trailers where I think they're kind of being a little coy about exactly who the bad guy is. Sometimes they're completely coy about that, and it ends up sort of working. We talked about how they actually did a little bit of a mislead with the D&D trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we kind of all knew who the bad guy was in it.
Right.
But the exact nature of what's going on was actually kind of hidden.
Yep.
And so that was pretty neat. And like also like what motivates Chris Pine, not at all shown in those movies, right. In those trailers. So anyway, this one that, yeah, they maybe keep it on the slide, but yeah, you know what I thought was one of the coolest things is that move where Kamala Khan was like running up like on a wall, kind of Matrix style, and using her powers all cool. I wasn't able to quite catch what the bad guys are. You know what else reminds me of the Beast Wars trailer?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of action and people running around on the Beast Wars trailer, but I couldn't tell you who the bad guy is.
And I don't wanna again, know. From the
that's
trailer,
actually
I don't wanna
okay.
Know.
You'd think, you know, you might want to know, well, is it just Decepticons? Is it, like, some specific faction? And in this one, you know, Marvel's got a bunch of bad guys. Which one is it? Maybe we'll know, but we'll probably know before it comes out.
They'll put out two more trailers. I wish they would leave it here.
But yes.
They're not gonna, but I wish they would, because this is all I need to know that, I mean, actually, they don't need any trailers for me. I was gonna go see this anyway.
But other people not only need this one, but they'll need to see
they
more.
They will need the others, I understand. Yeah. But anyway, super fun teaser. I'm super excited to see these characters together. I've been looking forward to this movie for a while, even though I think I've been disappointed in the last few Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Quantumania, I like but didn't love Quantumania and Thor Love and Thunder, which some people have rounded up to. These are all terrible, and I'm like, I don't think they're terrible, I just think they're not at the level that Marvel had been at.
Right. The defaulting to terrible is... That's nerd overkill. That's hot take.
Nerd overkill is a great name for a band, by the way.
it's kind of... It's using your nerd powers for lameness.
Yes.
And there's still a ton of fun stuff going on here. I'm looking forward to seeing what it is. In the meantime, I'll probably finish watching Ms. Marvel.
You should. It's good. Yes, it's a good fun. It's a fun ending. We saw a little teaser. This is just like maybe 15 seconds.
Uh-huh.
It's an Adult Swim cartoon. It's called My Adventures with Superman. Yeah. And it looks almost like an anime-influenced Superman.
Yeah, but kind of like, I don't know if I don't know what anime I'd say it looks like. There's a lot of different anime styles. Yeah. But it's kind of... It has an upbeat energy to it. This is a pretty classic-looking Superman. And I know it's weird to say, but the fact that he was wearing the sort of the Superman trunks, the classic kind of red trunks, tells me that they're... That usually tells me you're not going for an overly serious, obnoxious vibe. The Superman who's like... might turn evil or something.
So this is going to be 20-something Superman, Lois, and Jimmy...
Okay.
So I think it's from Lois's point of view, kind of thing. Basically, Lois is Clark and Lois are falling in love. Jimmy is a photographer taken under Lois's wing. She's an investigative journalist. And it looks like Brainiac might be involved in it in some way.
It looks cool. You know, I am always kind of interested to see how Superman is reinterpreted. And they did a good job on the CW show.
Mm-hmm.
And... we had seen some art ahead of time. You know, I've seen character designs for all of them, and they looks really good. I'm curious to see what vibe they set up. The fact that it's kind of like almost a team thing, but like the team is Lois, Jimmy, and Superman reminds me of what. Remember, Randy, how like fresh the Flash felt when it started on the CW?
Yeah.
It kind of has some of that energy. You know, of Barry and his team from Star Labs.
This is designed by a guy named Jake White, who I've met a long while back. I forgot. Uh-huh. He's friends with some of our guys, like Chad Thomas and some of those guys.
Okay.
So he has done work for Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network, and he is the guy running this. But he has a webcomic called Necropolis, and he's worked on stuff for Marvel and DC. He's done some like all-ages comics for First Second. And I've liked his style, so that kind of makes sense.
Cool.
So it's
as short as that was, it bodes well.
Yeah, it's a fun teaser. So Star Wars Celebration happened, wherever it happens. I don't know.
Yep.
Orlando, maybe?
I have to admit, as a Trek guy who we just crossed First Contact Day, and they had a few announcements, but it was not like a lot of big stuff, I was rather jealous of Star Wars' presence.
Yep. Well, apparently Indiana Jones is a Star Wars movie.
sure, it's Lucasfilm.
Yeah, yeah.
There's, I think, well, what are they? Didn't they hide, like, C-3PO or R2 somewhere in there? They
probably.
They've done that stuff.
But anyway, they did do a new trailer for, probably final trailer for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yep.
And Dave, I think you have, the previous two trailers have not quite won you over.
Yep. Each successive one was a little more interesting to me. I always thought Dial of Destiny sounds stupid, and I still do.
Yep.
But, man, I saw this one, and I actually thought, that's a great trailer.
It is a really good trailer. We're wondering if there might actually be some time travel involved in it.
The Dial of Destiny thing is like a little device-looking thing with little spinners and decoder wheel-looking ancient stuff.
Well,
and he says it, something like it allow us to correct Hitler's mistakes.
Yeah, the bad guy is Mads Mikkelsen playing a Nazi guy who maybe has run in with Indy before. Yeah. And it looks like he is maybe wanting to get the dial to reset and redo World War II. Right.
And then I'm suddenly thinking, oh, are all these glimpses we see of a younger Indiana Jones with, frankly, flawless special effects in the same way that Fury's younger turn in Captain Marvel was flawless? Right. I'm like, are those not flashbacks? Are those going to be scenes of actual, perhaps, time travel?
You know what's interesting, Dave? What if it is old Indy and young Indy's body? Because then any movement stuff you can explain away.
Yeah.
I don't think so, though. I think it's going to be flashbacks.
I don't know. Those
but
could we'll
be.
See.
But anyway. If they wanted to have a workaround of, like, well, he's going to move, like, 80-year-old Harrison Ford, well, we can make him look like it, they could do a thing where it's like, yeah, it is old Indy and young Indy's body.
Yeah.
Like, that would be kind of clever.
And they've got a few options to work with there. We don't know what they're going to do. I think, but, you know, I don't want to know.
But the important thing is, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is playing Helena, his goddaughter.
Yeah.
And Phoebe Waller-Bridge, for those who haven't seen Fleabag, is amazing. She's also involved in the writing, and she's written some really great stuff. So I'm very excited about this. The trailer promises a lot of cool action.
They got off on the right foot by, like, it's clearly set in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the first thing you hear is Rolling Stones' Sympathy for the Devil,
mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to think of that for Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
But that's how the timeline works. And yet, you're looking and you're, like, seeing, like, some of the visuals of the 60s. You see, like, a black woman with an afro and stuff like that.
You see
that.
A kid in an astronaut helmet.
Kid in an astronaut
and
helmet.
And he's riding the subway and he just kind of looks old and
he looks a little grumpy about, like, the little, like, kind of annoying kid.
So, I'll say one of the things that got me on board this that I have now seen older Harrison Ford in Shrinking on Apple Plus.
Yeah.
I think Nick and I both talked about this.
Yep.
And I love watching him play an old man. It's like he has finally accepted, oh, I'm older now.
Yeah.
And as a result, I think he's made peace with not being Indiana Jones. And at the same time, I think that may make him a better Indiana Jones.
It makes a sort of sense. But, you know, in addition to all of that stuff, there is, like, you know, there's these glimpses of young Indiana Jones that look like they're from some alternate timeline where there were just other Indiana Jones movies when he was, like, 30.
Yep.
And there's, like, he's, like, you see Indy, some of these is modern, some is in the past or whatever, but, like, you see him, like, in a tomb falling into this trap. There's a great scene of him, I believe in modern times, riding a motorcycle down a subway as the car, you know, subway car is, like, about to run him down, and I'm like, man, the way it was filmed looks dope. Not a mutt in sight. Not a Shia LaBeouf in sight.
Here's a question. There's a thought experiment for you.
Okay.
They did Indiana Jones and the Temple of Dooms with a cult sequel.
Yes.
And now they're all Indiana Jones and.
Right.
The original movie is now called Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, but it was originally called Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
If this franchise had been called something, if it had been Raiders of the Lost Ark and then the Temple of Doom, and then if they left Indiana Jones off the marquee, wouldn't it be easier to transition it to, like, Short Round taking it over or
that?
Because Indiana Jones, they centered Indiana Jones so much, they kind of made it harder to franchise.
Yeah, that's true, and you know, I cannot exactly put that on them, because, you know, I'm glad that they probably made that first movie not actually particularly with sequels in mind.
Right.
Maybe they thought it would be likely,
right.
But they just made one of the most amazing action movies, if not maybe the best action movie of all time.
Yep, yeah.
So
I'm not saying they did anything wrong, I just think it's interesting that in this age of franchising, when everything is with an eye toward maybe it could be a franchise.
Right.
They went the other way. They turned the original movie into more of a
Knives Out is called Knives Out, or that's the thing they did, not Benoit Blanc,
which we all thought, which Rian Johnson didn't like. I don't like, but maybe they're smart.
Maybe they're smart because as you know, that maybe, let's say they do 4 or 5 of these movies, and then Daniel Craig is like, yeah, I think I'm done, but they've introduced a sidekick who we really
like. They've introduced 2 so far.
Yeah.
Like, he could absolutely have passed on to
another. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. And then it becomes Knives Out.
Right.
It stays Knives Out, and yeah. It just gets there.
Yeah, tell me you wouldn't watch Janelle Monáe's character in a standalone movie.
Right. I would absolutely watch that. Or character. What's her name from the
Anna,
first one?
Anna de Armas.
Yep.
Actually, so, if the
two of them are multiples?
If there's, basically, what if, like, every time there's some young woman that he helps.
Yeah.
And then their first movie together is solving Benoit Blanc's murder or something.
That'd be great.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
So if you decide
Let's not project so far. No, and of course,
no. What I want is a new Benoit Blanc movie every year.
The notion of Benoit Blanc's murder fills me with sadness.
I know. But eventually he's going to die, and he better die as a murdered.
No. It's eventually better. It's going to realize he staged it all, and he's living a happy gay life in the tropics.
And he's just like, I wanted to pass along my skills, and I wanted to make sure that my apprentices.
I mean, honestly, I would.
What better way than by solving my murder?
They're like, we nearly got killed. They're like, but you didn't.
But you didn't.
the greatest mystery solver of our time, for sure.
Love that idea, actually.
Yeah, let's pitch it.
Yeah.
Hey, Rian Johnson, I know you created this character and you're very close to him and you want to write everything to do with it, but we have a neat idea.
And I understand that Dave and I have written 0 movies. However... Yes.
However, we wrote an incredible script. I drew some of it as a comic. It's on a napkin now.
Yes.
But bear with us.
Yes. My skills are in podcasting, so we pitched this podcast. Anyway, Indiana Jones is a ton of fun.
Yeah, At this point, unless it gets, like, you know, terrible reviews,
yeah.
I feel like I really want to see this. It looks like there's easily enough stuff that I'd like to see. It reminded me something, and I haven't probably had this happen since the crushing sadness of Crystal Skull, how much I loved Indiana Jones back in the day. It really was like my favorite movie as a kid. I used to watch it all the time. But I'd kind of just let myself sort of forget that.
Dave, you know what this is like?
I had buried the pain.
It's like when I was like, I'm done with Star Wars.
Yeah.
You're never done with Indiana Jones, Dave.
I mean, it's an idea that is always going to remain cool.
Well, it's funny. A few years ago, when they were filming Crystal Skull, and they were talking about doing a new Star Wars, and I was like, I don't ever want to see these movies. Why are they making them? And that was kind of my reaction when they were like, when they first announced we're making a 5th Indiana Jones movie, I'm like, why? Don't do this. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, I want to see it.
Yeah, well, I guess one thing I couldn't have guessed is that they might take that technology that allows you to de-age celebrities and stuff like that and do it right. And we've seen it a few times right, and the MCU really pioneered it. But it's been done right. I just didn't think that that would be something that an Indiana Jones movie would particularly want to do or would think to do. I thought they would sort of want to do a bunch of dumb old man stuff.
Now, what if they bring in Short Round as a MODOK?
I don't know what you just said. Let me tell you, though, MODOK was quite the misstep in Quantumania, but anything that allowed them to bring in Short Round would be good.
Yeah.
And they should absolutely...
Agreed.
I don't even know that I would say hand the series off to him, but, like, give him a movie at the very least. Give him the next movie and see what can happen.
That would be awesome.
There could be other, like... You know, Indiana Jones, always they made out that he had, like, a network of allies. And there's others we don't know about, us other than Brody and Sala and all those guys.
Well, his goddaughter has a father who is a new character.
Yep. So yeah, bring, you know, like, there's it's a playground you can have some fun with.
All right, let's get to the Star Wars stuff.
Okay.
There is a teaser for Ahsoka, long-awaited Ahsoka, which is essentially the live-action sequel to Rebels.
Yep, I think my friends who
any or none of Rebels.
I've seen like 2 or 3 episodes. I liked it, but it didn't grab me enough. You know how like sometimes those cartoons are like the first few are fine,
it takes a little while.
But like it's like episode 12 or season 2 is really where it took off. Yes, season 1 was good, but. And so, yeah, it just didn't grab me at the time, and I've heard good stuff. So when I was watching this, I know a lot of people, this was their favorite sort of announcement.
Yep.
But I am not a huge fan of Thrawn. I didn't like those books. I tried them. I just wasn't that into them. I don't know Rebels, so I did recognize Chopper when this was on, but, like, almost nobody else in it.
Where do you know Chopper from? Oh, just from Rebels?
I've seen enough, and, yeah, he's a little more iconic, that droid iconography.
Man, so... I love Rebels. It may be my favorite Star Wars stuff.
Okay.
And so seeing some of this stuff come to live action, the teasers of it, when we saw Zeb and the Mandalorian lately, recently I was super happy about that.
Yeah, that was a good visualization, too.
It was perfect. This, they've got, I think the original voice actresses playing, Hera and, God, the girl with the Mandalorian girl, whose name I'm blanking on now.
But wait, isn't Hera played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I believe she voiced her. I think I'd heard that. I don't know if that's
like they
true.
Overdubbed her, you mean?
I think... Well,
like Mary Elizabeth Winstead voiced her in the show?
I thought so, but I could be wrong.
I don't know.
I'm going to look it up. All anyway. Right.
So she appears in it, but that is a great bit of casting. What little I know, I'm like, oh man, like, you know, I always thought of Rosario Dawson was a good call for Ahsoka.
Yep.
That's a good call for Hera. And we were talking about this off air. I'm like, you know, when Ahsoka first showed up, she was an annoying sidekick character who young Anakin called Snips.
Yep, he called her Snips.
Awful.
Yep.
And people did not like that character. I think I always thought, even from the beginning, there was at least some solid possibility. But I get why people didn't like her, because, you know, they were writing her as kind of the sidekick who's like, oh, why can't I go on a mission?
Okay, so I was wrong. She was not. She did not voice her in the original.
Okay.
But she still looks like good casting.
But it's fascinating that, like, Ahsoka became... They did, you know, Filoni did such a good job on those cartoons that she became a beloved character.
Yep.
And now she's finally got her time to really shine in live action. So what else? Tell me, as a non-Rebels person, what else happened in here?
So Hera is she's like one of the big pilots. She's an awesome character.
Didn't they like break in the
B-wing? B-wing. Yep. She was one of the first pilots on it. Sabine is the other person. Oh, that's interesting. Sabine was voiced by Tia Sirkar, who you might know as Vicky from The Good Place.
Okay.
So that's not who's playing her, but they've got their live action cast for that. Sabine is a Mandalorian. She has, like, spray-painted armor and that kind of stuff. And so it's kind of cool to see her.
That was her in the trailer?
Yep.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
With the hair.
Yep.
That makes so much more sense. I'm just, like, having watched Rebels, I'm like, oh, isn't she, like, a teenager or maybe 20 or something?
Yeah, but they're all older now.
They're all older.
Because Rebels is during the Rebel period, and this is after.
Oh, no, I get it. I at least get it from Ahsoka.
Oh, man, no wonder this didn't hit for you. Like, there's stuff in there that just didn't land.
Yeah, no, I was just like, oh, this character looks interesting, but I don't know who it is.
Oh, man, for me, this was like, oh, wow, it's that. There's so many, like, little Easter eggs.
Yep.
But also, just like...
Did it have the ghost in it?
They did show the ghost. They didn't show the ghost. They showed the ghost little spinoff ship.
It's a little other ship. Yeah. That means they're going to save it up for a big
trailer.
They're
going to save the ghost, yeah. But Thrawn there, Lars Mikkelsen, who I believe voiced Thrawn in Rebels, is
I did look that.
Thrawn.
I've seen that mentioned. He definitely voiced him.
And Thrawn... And they mentioned Heir to the Empire in here. Like they make a nod to Thrawn's... Because the Thrawn trilogy is out of continuity.
Right, but they are clearly drawing on it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that wins fans back.
Yep.
It's how, like, oh, you know, it's not dissimilar to how the MCU would work. Yeah, they weren't exactly adapting Civil War. They were drawing on it.
Yeah.
But the idea is, like, if you can pick the best of something, even if it's not out of continuity from its original format, you're going to get something that's going to still give you... Like, they want to tap into the best of it.
We've also got two cool-looking Inquisitors, including one played by Ray Stevenson, a.k.a. The Punisher, a.k.a. Rome's Titus Pullo.
Yep.
He's going to make a great bad guy.
He's the guy who looks like some kind of evil Grail Knight.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
He's a big dude, too, so he's going to be a good...
Yeah, he looks huge.
Ahsoka is... Like, she's such a total badass. She's got the twin lightsabers. She was the Jedi who got tired of the Jedi Order shit and quit being a Jedi.
Yeah.
When she showed up in Mandalorian, she was pretty great.
She does a cool move at the beginning of this trailer that sort of seems like it could be straight out of the animated stuff that she was in. She, like, takes her twin lightsabers and she, like, spins them on the ground in a perfect cut circle around her, and you realize she's on, like, the top of some temple or something, and it's like she just made a perfect cut and just falls down on the, you know, effortlessly down on the little circle.
It'd be less cool if she, like, didn't land on her feet.
She lands like a badass. She lands. Yes. She does the hero landing.
The hero landing.
She looks cool with the double lightsabers and in a unique sort of way, but, you know, reminiscent a little bit of when, like, Maul would do it.
Yeah. yeah, it's this is a really cool, good-looking trailer. I'm very excited for this show. And like I say, it makes me want to go back and rewatch Rebels. If I was not five seasons deep on Deep Space Nine and trying to finish that,
yep,
I would definitely be on my Rebels rewatch right now.
Yep,
but that's probably next.
Yeah, that's
I'm gonna trade space franchises.
Yeah, that's fair. They can live in harmony. And there's enough. When does Ahsoka start?
I think it's August, maybe. Okay. I'm not sure actually when Ahsoka starts, but I feel like it's got to be coming in like August or something. Now I'm curious to see if it. Yep, August 2023. So yeah, the very cool trailer. Very excited about this. Dave, you should watch the rest of Rebels.
All right, I'll consider it.
No, you won't.
So the reason I will. Once upon a time, I watched a few episodes. Like I said, I thought this is pretty good. And then when it came out on like Blu-ray, I bought the Blu-ray. So
I have
the
Blu-rays too.
I own the Blu-ray, it's just sitting there.
I also at some point, like, I want to go through all the Clone Wars again too, especially having watched Bad Batch, which is a
all of it again. It's like 100 bazillion episodes.
I know.
Are you insane?
I don't, but I've only seen some of those episodes once.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I have the Blu-ray set of those too.
Yeah, I believe, I don't know how many seasons you can, it became miniseries, so it's hard to gauge, but I watched like 4 to 5 seasons of it, so I'm not that far from finishing it.
Oh man, the finale of it is phenomenal.
I guess.
It's great.
All right.
But Filoni is like clearly bringing a lot of it into Mandalorian and all that too, so it's all continuity.
You know what's interesting about this is Filoni's going to get he's getting a movie somewhere in there, right?
I was going to bring that up. That's next.
Okay, but before you even say whatever it is, because I don't even know what it is. What's interesting about that is Filoni, he's an animator. He's an director of animation. But it reminds me of how, you remember how people were like, oh, back in the 90s, they're like, they should give Bruce Timm and Paul Dini the Batman movies. They said that over and over, because the Batman animated series is the best Batman
ever. And
they should have, and they were right. Although some of the comics they did make me a little wary of it.
Fair.
But Filoni has proven more, maybe, overall adaptable than them.
Yeah.
And it is kind of like that dream come true.
Yeah.
They took the guy who did the best animation, the animation's so good that it kind of redeemed some cruddy earlier stuff.
Yep.
And they're like, okay, now we're putting you in charge.
And here's the thing. I am fairly certain that once Bad Batch, which got its third and final season announced, once Bad Batch is over, I feel like Filoni's got to move on and do a animated series that is like after Skywalker, after Rise of Skywalker, and maybe redeem some of the stuff that doesn't work about the sequels.
I feel like he's already kind of touching on that some of the clone stuff going on is being used, that's happening in the backdrop of Mandalorian
stuff.
To set up the Palpatine stuff, because everybody knows of somehow Palpatine returned is one of the dumbest things ever.
It is.
And so, but he's like, this is a living, breathing work, and I'm going to patch it up.
Yep.
And he does it in such a way that he feels both like, it's like he does both a good job at it, and he does not call out. He doesn't ever say yeah, this sucked. He just fixes it.
Yeah.
This
guy used Jar Jar in Clone Wars. Now, I never liked it, but he was doing his best to try and redeem that character, too.
We talked about when he had Mando say wizard.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, sometimes he even tweaks the nose of fans a little bit like, oh, you thought you didn't like it? I'm going to make the coolest character say it. But anyway, yeah, that's pretty good. All right, so let's move on to Filoni's movie.
So yeah, before we get to that, though, there's one little bit, and I think this must have come out around the time of Celebration. Donald Glover has said, he's like, yeah.
Oh, right.
He said, we've talked about me coming back as Lando. He said, if I say anything more than that, Kathleen Kennedy's going to kill me.
Yep.
And I'm like, Disney, you better fucking do that.
Yeah, it was, I liked Solo a lot more than
Solo
other people
too.
Did.
I would absolutely have watched more of that.
I understand that there's some people who didn't, and even among those people, they will usually say the only good part of that was Lando. And so I'm like, okay, I disagree with you that there was
but
no
Lando
other good
was
stuff.
Was a good part.
But Lando was a good part. And so if he is interested, they should take him up on that.
Yep.
It's a great opportunity. Lando's a super, super good character.
Also, while he is still alive, they should have Billy Dee Williams narrated as old Lando in the future.
Yeah, they could definitely do one of those. That's the framing structure or whatever. I like that. Star Wars they've gotten better, especially I think Filoni and maybe Favreau at sort of homaging their past. The thing with Ahmed Best playing a super badass Jedi
that was awesome.
Protector in it. That's a perfect example of it, and I always like when people remember their past. I liked it on like the Flash TV show when they brought in the dude who played Flash in the 1990s.
Yep.
We should always do this kind of stuff.
Agreed. Okay. So yes, they did announce a trio, not a trilogy, but a trio of movies.
Uh huh.
Dave Filoni is going to do, I think, maybe this first live action movie. That will basically focus on the New Republic and close out the stories from The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Ahsoka, and other... So basically it sounds like he is going to be doing a movie that finishes out all the Mandalorian, the post Return of the Jedi stuff.
Interesting. So do we think then that like those characters will all kind of participate?
I bet we're going to see
Mando teamed with Ahsoka, teamed with Boba Fett.
I bet they will. I bet they'll admit all of that.
As a long-term plan, like, it's almost like he's put together a new Avengers or a new, same way Han and Leia and Luke came together back in the original. It's like he's quietly put that together without us realizing that he was going to, like, it was all to build to that.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I think he's basically says, and Force Awakens is 30 years out now from Return of the Jedi, so there's room to tell a story in this time period of, the Empire's remnants are still around. The New Republic is still fighting them, and it's basically doing a sort of, like... I think, basically, he may be doing the setup to the First Order that we want to see.
Yeah.
Like, how did this go so wrong?
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And then there's James Mangold, who directed the new Indiana Jones and directed Logan, is going to do a movie about the birth of the Force. Basically, he said...
So this is a far-flung past.
He says he sees this kind of like Ben-Hur or the Ten Commandments. The Force has become a religious legend that spans through all these movies. Where did it come from? How's it found? Who found it? Who was the first Jedi? I'm like, this is all stories we've never seen. That's a really interesting idea.
Yeah. That means that they're going to show somebody out there who probably like was just like some nomad or something like that, and somebody attacked him, and he called on it without realizing what he was doing it.
Yeah.
And he becomes like their first prophet or Jedi you know, leader. Yeah, that's cool. Obviously there's been stuff like Knights of the Old Republic, but even that did not show...
This is prior to Knights of the Old Republic and High Republic and all that kind of stuff.
And the idea of sort of tapping into... they've already tapped into... As Ben-Hur's chariot race is famous, and so the pod race was clearly drawing on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea of pulling at the sort of that epic style, that sounds cool.
Yep. The third movie... is going to be 15 years after Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
Is going to center on Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, who's returning. And directed by Emmy and Oscar-winning director Charmaine Obaid-Chinoy, she is the first woman and person of color to direct a Star Wars movie. She's Pakistani.
Uh-huh.
She did a movie, Saving Face, in 2011 that she won an Academy Award for. It's a documentary short. And in 2015, A Girl in the River, The Price of Forgiveness. And she directed two episodes of Miss Marvel.
Okay.
So that is this one is going to be basically sort of like Rey building a new Jedi Order after the end of the Rise of Skywalker stuff.
I have to say these projects are all pretty good sounding to me.
And the script is by Peaky Blinders and Spencer writer Stephen Knight.
Oh, interesting. So he's gonna like potentially give it some grit.
Yeah.
Because that series always had some edge and was all very outlaw sort of thing.
Yep.
I always liked not just Rey, but I liked Finn and Poe, and I liked all those characters. It's easy to say that yes, sometimes the writers didn't serve them well, but I'm sorry to say that started with Lucas.
Yeah,
I've seen that happen before. I've seen poor Natalie Portman having to say some really awful lines,
really terrible dialogue. Yep.
But I like Rey, and one of my favorite scenes, I think, was this in the last movie? It was in all the trailers for it, where there's that, like, who's the dude who's bad guy?
Kylo Ren.
Where it's, like, his ship coming across the sands, and she does that backflip over it with, like, her lightsaber drawn.
That was cool.
I was like, that's the hotness. They didn't quite live up to all of that,
I haven't watched Rise of Skywalker since the theater, because I was really disappointed with it, but... There's stuff I liked in that movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the adherence of it, it's their favorite of it. It's precisely because it was sort of... Oh, no, wait, sorry, Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. I'm talking about Last Jedi.
Yeah, I'm talking about Rise of Skywalker.
So I am even, like, almost... I'm an apologist, I guess, for Rise of Skywalker. Not for its every plot point, but more no. for how it made me feel. It yeah. was an emotional ride, and I liked a lot of the character stuff in it. I'm honestly glad that Kylo Ren got redemption, even though it's a bit of a tough case. But I'm like, God, if Star Wars is, you know, has one of among its core themes, I think
redemption's high on it.
Redemption's high on it, and the other one is punch Nazis. Always punch Nazis. Yeah.
Which is those are kind of at odds, actually.
Yeah, that's true. and I actually think an exploration of how like it seems like something that Favreau or Filoni would be better suited for. Of how like are we really okay with Darth Vader as a person now, or can we just say that Luke made hit, you know, when he forgave him or whatever, he's like, they're still good in you. It's not like killing the Emperor fixed all his sins.
Well, I think also that basically the redemption can come when you die. Yep. I think that's the thing. It's like if you want to redeem them and then keep them around, that's a little harder.
Yep. and the other thing is although. True rehabilitation would be interesting if they showed it. One of the things I liked about the was it Stephen Knight also written the Christmas Carol that the BBC did a couple of years ago. That was the gritty one with Guy Pearce.
Yeah,
where like it has the F-bomb. Hmm. There is abuse in this. It is serious. Hmm. But among other things, spoiler warning ish. You know, at the end, when usually Randy, when Scrooge goes to visit Bob Cratchit, and he's like, "Look, I bought you a turkey," and they're like, "Oh, great, have dinner with us.
Everything's fixed."
That is not how this ends. They're like, "Well, he talks privately with I think Bob Cratchit's wife, who has a particular issue with him for reasons that are very reasonable in that thing."
Yep.
And she's like, I think she says something to the effect of, it does seem like you're a changed person. She's like, but I don't know if I can ever forgive you.
Hmm.
And she's like, I think she says something like, I'll be trying to earn it for the rest of my life. And I'm like, when you've done as bad as he's done, and they showed how like his, like the people who like toiled in mines and stuff for Scrooge, like that there were like deaths and stuff, right?
Yeah.
They're like, when you take part in a system that systematically oppresses somebody, you can't just become a nice person overnight. You have to work to fix it. And I thought that was a really cool ending. I really liked that they kind of updated it in that very intelligent way. It still had a lot of the same. It had the themes of redemption. It says it's like nobody's ever passed it. Anyway, my point is, you could bring some of that into Star Wars and give a more sophisticated view of what they've already touched on.
He did write Christmas Carol and the current Great Expectations it's running.
Okay. I guess I might ought to check that.
And then, it was not movie, but the other news they showed some footage from, although we couldn't see it, they just showed a Celebration. The Acolyte, which is the one set during the High Republic era.
Right. It's so the era that's the new era that they built up that's, what, between the Old Republic and, like, prequels
or something? But basically the Jedi are at their height, and I guess the Acolyte is going to be about a bad guy. Oh. It's going to be more about the crimey side of things, where the heroes are these villains who are basically, the villains are at their lowest ebb. Like, the Jedi have won, all good rules the galaxy, and this is going to be what it's like to be a criminal in this era.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is an interesting idea. It's got, among people, it's got Amanda Stenberg, who I don't recognize off the top of my head, and Lee Jung-jae from Squid Game, and Manny Jacinto from The Good Place.
Okay, so they're pulling some cool names.
There was some Andor footage from Season 2, which we don't get to see.
Oh, wow.
But that's going to premiere in August 2024.
Man, that is a long ways off.
Yep.
Well over a year
breaks
out.
My heart to not have Andor. It's really hard.
But I got to say, there have been times when I'm just like, man, there's like two Star Wars shows going on right now. That's too much. I could walk away from it right now. And I sometimes like still feel that way. I'm sure it'll happen again. But I had to say, these things all sound kind of interesting to me.
I am always on more, as long as you're not screwing it, as long as you're not spreading yourself too thin, mm-hmm. which is, I don't think it's the same thing, because, you know, if, say, Ryan North was writing 8 comics, I'd be nervous, because I don't want one guy writing that many comics. But this is all different creative teams.
They've assembled a pretty good collection of talents.
And this is where I differ from, say, Bob Iger and some fans. I'm like, I don't want less of the thing I like. Give me more of the thing I like. I can choose not to watch all of it all at the same time.
Right.
I can not watch a thing until I feel like watching it.
I would rather be tantalized.
Not me. I want a fire hose of content.
Cram it down my throat. Yes. Take a fire hose and also cram it in my butt.
Yes.
Spray Star Wars into my butt.
Spray Star Wars in my butt.
Oh, goodness.
And then the last thing, Star Wars Skeleton Crew, which is an animated show Jude Law and a bunch of kids that is basically said to evoke classic Emblem films. And I think you and I, Dave, have pegged this. We're like, this is going to be their Prodigy.
Yeah, like Star Trek Prodigy.
Star Trek Prodigy. And if they can do that, that'd be great, because that was fantastic.
Yep. I have to say, I'm not necessarily excited about a group of younglings, but as someone who grew up in the era of Goonies and all those other sort of kid movies, what else? Explorers, kid heroes like Short Round, you know, even War Games and stuff like that. I'm like, I'll keep an open mind about it. I'll keep an open mind.
The last bit of news is also James Mangold related, which just as they announced he's doing a Star Wars movie, writing and directing.
Yep.
He has also signed on to direct Swamp Thing.
What a sellout.
I don't know how he's going to do both. He doesn't know what order he's going to do it in, so we'll see. I'm like, man, one of those projects is probably going to fall through, and I bet,
yeah.
Because I have more faith in Star Wars than I do in DC Comics.
That's fair. So he's the Logan guy?
He's a Logan guy.
Randy, I believe you and I are among the people who don't revere that movie.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's good. I also think it had some dopey plot points sometimes.
Yep.
And was almost, even for a movie that kind of had a mature surface, was almost sort of juvenile in how it was like felt the need to show Professor Xavier dropping the F-bomb a few times.
Yep.
And like, maybe once. But like, that's not Xavier's thing. Stop being a doofus.
Agreed.
That said, he's a pretty skilled at like, you know, his craft is clearly pretty high, and
he clearly has impressed people in Hollywood of getting gigs at DC and at Star Wars and all this stuff. So
if he manages to pull it off, I wish him well on the Muck Monster.
I do too on the Muck Monster. Yes, but more importantly, please make this Star Wars movie, because I want to see the Birth of the Force.
Yeah, try not to screw it up.
Try to screw it up.
Like you did Logan.
all right, I think that will wrap it up for this time. Because, we're about time to wrap it up. And we'll be back next week with Nick and his thoughts on this week's comics, I'm sure.
That's right.
And more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.